your life.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of WA This Week. Look, if you're following it live, thanks very much for listening. And just remember, it is live, so at the end of my little brief presentation, very happy to answer any questions that you have. Interesting week this week in Parliament, but we finished the parliamentary session this week with a debate with the government on cost of living. And, you know, I always find it fascinating having these debates in Parliaments because you listen to the Premier respond, you listen to his senior ministers respond, same old, same old. Oh, nothing to see here. There's no cost of living issue. And by the way, we've done such a tremendous job of protecting households. But because you know, because you're living with the impact of these high cost of living, just what a massive impact the cost of living is on people. And just we saw reported in the press over the weekend, it was the West or the Sunday Times, I forget which one it was, but they had an article reporting that dairy products on average had gone up over 20% in the last 12 months. I mean, that's a huge impact. I know in my household, I've still got kids at home and they consume vast quantities of milk and cheese and cream and the like. And that is actually a significant component in my weekly shopping bill. And I know it is for most people. Meat prices, I mean, it's enough to make you a vegetarian. The prices are so high now for meat that you really agonise over which cuts you buy and are really trying to minimise the cost there. But of course, on top of that, mortgages are increasing quite dramatically. We see this all over. People have seen a doubling in mortgage repayments, and of course, a lot of people are coming off fixed mortgages and they're going to have to pay significantly more. I think I saw a report a little while ago that the average mortgage in Western Australia was over 30% of household income. Now, by definition, if a mortgage repayment is 30% or more of a household income, that's officially deemed to be mortgage stress. And that's just based on the fact that there are so many other expenses that households face. Well, of course, that was when the interest rates were lower than they are now and lower than they're likely to be. But the long and the short of that is that the state government has the capacity to help households and they're just refusing to do it. And it was interesting in the debate and boasted. They said, oh, look, we gave $600 energy credit a couple of years ago and then a year ago or so we gave another credit. And as I've said before, they were simply election bribes. The $600 energy credit was when in fact inflation was around 1%. So it wasn't there for coping with increases in cost of living because there significantly weren't any. Inflation was very low. That was in the COVID crisis. But of course, it was immediately before the state election. No surprise there. And then actually, just before the federal election, they offered another $400 rebate. Now, you know, interestingly, the inflation rate had gone up to around 2-3% by then, and yet they made a much lower plan. But of course, it was a bribe just before the federal election. I mean, this is pretty, base politics. But now, when you've had inflation go up to around 8% in Western Australia, nothing, crickets, no help to households. And when you look at the response, those credits went to every household in Western Australia, and Minister Safiotti in this debate was saying that she'd spoken to households and they valued all of these households had valued getting that $1,000. And I think, as a general point of view, if someone gives you money, you're always happy to get it. But of course, the truth is, it's the people who are struggling that really need the help. And when you give money to everyone, that doesn't help. And the point I made to Minister Safiotti was that when the Premier was at his $1,000 a bottle wine tasting event up at Nigel Sadler's house, perhaps Nigel, he's only got a few hundred million in the bank. Perhaps he was grateful that that $1,000 he got back on his power bill was going to pay for at least one of the bottles of wine that he was sponsoring at that wine tasting event. What we've said as an opposition to the government is, look, people are really struggling. we don't, you know, giving the general rebates to every household. I mean, look, I don't mind if people give me free money, but the truth is I don't need the government to give me money. I, you know, my family can get by, okay? But I know there are lots of families that they're making agonising decisions on where they can spend their money, what they give up. You know, people are giving up car insurance, house insurance. These are essential safeguards that, that, you know, if something goes wrong, they could be in real strife, but they're having to make the decision to do that. Those households need help. One of the ways we've said as an opposition you can do this is give additional money to not-for-profit agencies so that they can go out and help the people that are in need. You know, whether it's Food Bank or whether it's the churches or other community organisations, they're out there on the ground. They can help the people who are most in need. And we said, why don't you give $250 million tranches over 2 years so that they can provide that additional help? That'd be real help to struggling households. The government just waves that away. You know, what are we going to see before the election in 2025? They'll probably come out with another election bribe because they're banking money everywhere. They've got record royalty income, record GST income. And of course, all their underlying fees and charges have increased dramatically. And that's the point of those rebates. They make a whole heap of noise about the rebates, but all the underlying fees and charges are going up, up, up every year. And those underlying fees and charges have gone up this year, and they'll be going up on July 1 this year as well. So, you know, the government needs to get serious, help people in need. They don't need to help billionaires who can host $1,000 a bottle of wine tasting evenings. They need to help you, the households that are struggling. We just want to touch on we've heard more discussion this week about Labor's emissions reduction target and their so-called safeguard mechanisms. One of the things I've made very clear is I support the energy transition to renewables. And I think, you know, just from a sovereign independence point of view, if you like, having energy independence makes a great deal of sense. But you need to do this in a way that doesn't disadvantage us against other countries, in particular, doesn't destroy an industry and jobs in Australia. And what the Labor government have introduced is going to do exactly that, and no more so than this so-called safeguard mechanism that they've implemented. So what they've done is gone in and identified what were previously industries that were, if you like, industries that are export exposed, where they're competing with countries that have no reduction of emissions and in fact have typically highly inefficient mineral processing plants and the like. So make sure they weren't unfairly disadvantaged. The government said, look, we'll excuse them from targets. But now they've brought them in under this so-called safeguard mechanism. So those companies, if they can't offset, and most of them can't, they're large energy consumers, and there are no trivial ways, there's no simple way, despite assertions people make, for them to do that. Look, if they can introduce carbon-free emissions that were cheaper, they'd be doing it tomorrow. So the reason that they're struggling is one, technology doesn't exist at the scale that they need, but of course the other one is invariably it's going to mean much higher costs for them. And they've said, look, you know, those companies can buy Australian carbon credit units, but they're saying year on year they have to have a 5% emission reduction or buy these carbon credit units at some undetermined value, but it'll be something like $100 a tonne or more for those carbon credit units. Well, I can tell you, for those marginal businesses, those businesses that are competing actively in the international market, many of them will shut down. Look, I worked with a company called Alcoa before I came into Parliament. Alcoa has three refineries in Western Australia. The refinery at Kwinana is the oldest. It's over 60 years. I think it's 66 years old now. The people that run that refinery have done an amazing job to keep it running all this time. But if and I'm not speaking for Alcoa, let me make this very clear, and I'm not speaking, they haven't asked me to talk about it. I'm speaking based on my knowledge of that refinery. I was the production manager there for 3.5 years and worked there for 5 years. You know, if that refinery has to pay millions and millions of dollars for carbon credit units, then that is a high likelihood that will shut down. And something like 6,000 jobs, Nick, will be eliminated in the state because of it. So, you know, the Labor Party, they love their sort of announcement. They love these feel-good statements and so on. But the reality is what they're doing is going to cost jobs. As I've made very clear, I'm not against the energy transition. In fact, I champion that. But I champion doing it in a way that does not disadvantage us. Because what's going to happen is if we move that mineral processing production from here, simply what will happen is the bauxite will go overseas and those jobs will be exported to China in all likelihood, where they burn dirty brown coal and much higher emissions to make the alumina than is here, where we burn natural gas, which has half the emissions of coal. I think the path that the Labor Party are going down on this is going to cause enormous fail to the Australian economy, and particularly those high-quality manufacturing jobs that are going to disappear. Are experiencing a higher level of crime in your community. And one of the reasons is that our police are simply overwhelmed. We've got mass resignations from the police force, the highest number on record, by some distance, can I say, from our police force. And because of the pressure they're under, record presentations of police officers for mental health treatment because of the pressure they're put under, because there are real issues within the police force that the government won't face. And one of those issues relates to ramping in hospitals. Now, I've spoken before about ambulance ramping, which, as I make very clear, it's not about the ambulances not doing their job. It's about hospitals being unable to take patients. Some percentage of the patients are going to hospitals are people who have been arrested and they may have been injured in that arrest and they have to go to the hospital. But what we found out this week is that last year police officers spent 6,000 hours red outside hospitals with people who had been arrested or apprehended but needed hospital treatment. 6,000 hours. Just imagine that. Imagine you're a highly trained police officer. You're there to protect the public. And what are you doing? You're stuck in the back of an ambulance for all of those hours. I mean, this is just crazy. It's another symptom of the dysfunction in our hospital system. Our hospitals can't cope. This Labor government is failing. The new health minister, Amajit Sanderson, is failing to deal with the issue. We're not seeing significant improvement. You know, I've said many, many times, I worked very closely with the police in my early career as a forensic scientist. I have the greatest respect for the police. The government needs to treat them with more respect, and they shouldn't have police officers stuck out outside hospitals for 6,000 hours when they should be out doing their job, helping to keep our community safe. Well, thanks very much. I'm looking forward to your questions, but otherwise, please remember you can subscribe to this as a podcast or whatever your app is. You can also watch it live on Facebook, Spotify, YouTube or TikTok just by searching Dr. Dave Arney. And I'll make it very clear, I made some comments previously about TikTok, but this is something the government should adopt. Our TikTok top link is done on what's called a burner phone. It's only used for that purpose. It's not connected to my office network. It's not used for any other purpose, so that we make sure that we maintain security. Otherwise, thanks very much for listening, and really happy for any questions.
Okay, we have a lot of questions on TikTok and only a couple of questions on Facebook. So I'll do Facebook first, and then we can go on TikTok. So TikTok, please be patient. Luca Burns says, Labor government is aligned with China.
We need to be, nuanced in the way that we respond to the issues with China. And that is, China's a really important trading partner for Australia. The reality is that if we didn't have trade with China, then we would have massively higher unemployment. The average standard of living in Australia would decline quite dramatically. So China is an important trading partner. Equally, we need to make sure that we're making decisions based on Australia's best sovereign interest. And certainly we don't want influence from China, or undue influence from China on our internal matters. And I think for any government, I think the former federal government you know, had to draw, you know, walk this line, and the current Labor government, state and federally, has to walk this line as well. We shouldn't be going out of our way just to make gratuitous comments that insult an important trading partner. Equally, our governments need to stand up for Australia when they're being asked to compromise their values or principles because of pressure from any other country, including China.
So with this question from Alan, I don't think I can word it exactly the way he asked it without risking having the video taken down. But basically, he's making the point that he thinks that there's some undue risks from the vaccine for younger people, and he wants you to comment on that.
Oh, look, to be honest, I'm not an expert on this, and so if I was to make a comment, it would be based on my intuitive views or speculation. And one of the things we've asked for at a state government level, we've asked that that the government carries out a thorough review of the whole COVID program. So, you know, everywhere from was the government response necessary? You know, the extreme restrictions on people's freedom of movement, making vaccinations compulsory, and so on. Go through. Don't do a review based on, trying to justify what you did, but do an open review. But in particular, you know, as a scientist, one of the things I would really like to see is a proper scientific analysis on the impact. I mean, some of you may have seen, it was a report in the paper that said that if you looked at total mortality rates across countries, so that's and compared that to pre-COVID, that in fact Sweden had lower total mortality rates than countries that had far more severe restrictions, including Australia. Now, I don't know why that was. Look, there can be any number of reasons that causes that, but of course, this article was alluding to the fact that they believe that was around the way COVID was dealt with in Sweden versus other countries. Look, I just don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that and say whether I think it's one way or the other. But I do think we have to get a learning out of this. We're going to have other global pandemics. It's really important that we have not a study based on governments justifying what they did or people's individual personal opinions, but let's have rigorous, detailed medical scientific study so that we learn about the future and for the future, and we make sure that the next pandemic we face, which given global trends is going to be sooner, not later, that we respond to that appropriately. And look, where mistakes were made, own up to them. Where things were done wrong, we need to understand where they were done wrong. I mean, I do know with the vaccination program, and this was evident quite early on, that vaccination was much more important for someone like me than it was for someone who was 18. And you'll notice as that program rolled out, it was actually, you know, initially for older people, and then it sort of came down through the age groups. But let's learn, let's understand, but I don't have the knowledge to make an informed comment.
All right. Annie Rose says, what about homelessness? I have to live in my car.
Look, Annie, that's just tragic. And I'm really sorry that you're in that situation. The tragedy is, and you probably know, that is all too familiar and it's an increasing problem. There are a few things. The state government have been absolutely weak on this. They are fine on announcements. I think that they talked about a common ground facility in East Perth. They say that now they're starting all that. But I think they'd made something like 19 announcements on that from the first time that it was mentioned, I think in 2019, and that was to help people who were homeless. Egregiously, they sold 1,300 social houses when they came into government. They say, oh, well, that was for a renewal program. But I think to today, they still haven't replaced them 6 years into their government. It's just heartbreaking and appalling. I'm happy if you contact my office and I'll do everything I can to put you in touch with agencies. There are some great not-for-profit agencies that can offer you assistance and help. So if you want to email my office, which is cotlislovemp.wa.gov.au, I'm happy to provide whatever assistance that this office can in facilitating those contacts. But it's a failure of the government. I just find it dumbfounding. I mean, mining companies are saying they can build, 500 room complexes, up in the Kimberleys in 12 months. And yet this state government struggles to provide any meaningful response on housing. Now, the housing minister, John Carey, he's a decent bloke. I think genuinely he's a compassionate person. But what's clear is he's not getting the support he needs in government to help resolve this issue. They keep on talking about money. I get sick of it, I'll be honest, and I'm sure this provides no solace for you, but they constantly talk about how many million dollars they've allocated to it. That's meaningless if houses haven't been built. I'm sorry that you're in that situation. I can only imagine how awful that is. And as I say, if my office can help in any way, we will.
All right. Jamie, now I don't know what Jamie 901 is talking about, but maybe you do. Can you comment on the Ben Sawkins situation?
Look, I think this is the new member coming into the upper house, formerly a member of the Labor Party, and he was their endorsed candidate. Because of Alana McTiernan's retirement, the Labor government had to fill the vacancy, and that's just the protocol. There's a process that's gone through in counting, but invariably it means the replacement person will come from the party of the person that resigned midterm for an upper house seat. So you don't have a by-election, they just do a recount. The person who was the likely choice didn't want to do it. And I think for a lot of people, the reality of coming into Parliament can be daunting for some if you're having to give up a good career to do it. Ben came in into Parliament. Look, I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment. He has some outstanding charges. I don't know the facts of it. I only know what, like anyone else has, what I've read in the media in relation to that. I do believe that the presumption of innocence before a conviction is important, and then that's one of the things I think's been lost in public debate these days. There used to be an old saying that it was better that 1,000 guilty people go free than an innocent person be prosecuted and go to jail. And I think in public debate these days, that's reversed to the better that 1,000 innocent people are prosecuted than one guilty person goes free. As I say, I don't know any of the details around that. And I guess, it sounds like there are matters the police have charged him with in relation to offences. Let's see how that plays out in the courts. I have great faith in our courts. I think our court system is thorough, and overwhelmingly our courts come to the right conclusion.
All right. Julia Troger is asking a question. I don't know what she means also, but maybe you do. She says, why are we going into Digito? Digito.
Look, I'm not quite sure. I'm happy to be educated. I say this constantly. One of the joys for me coming into Parliament, and I genuinely mean this, is the ability to learn. I love learning. I just love finding out new things, but I'm afraid I don't understand what the issue is with that. So happy for you to maybe send a text or something and you can educate me on it.
All right. Mayday says, name me a Liberal Party that has increased hospital funding more than a Labor Party and I'll eat my hat.
Oh, well, eat your hat is all I can say. Go back to the Barnett government. We saw three major tertiary hospitals built under the last Liberal government. We saw the Midland campus, the St John, the public-private partnership between St John and Gond and the state government. We had a private hospital built and a public hospital built. Fiona Stanley, massive major tertiary hospital built under the previous Liberal government. And of course, we had the Perth Children's Hospital, which was initiated, spent and built under the Liberal government. On top of that, I think it was something like 11 other hospitals, or in fact it was more than that, were substantially rebuilt and expanded under the previous Liberal government from literally from one end of the state to the other. this Labor government, and perhaps I assume you're a Labor fan, but I don't know whether you are or not, but this Labor government's absolutely failed in this regard. They constantly talk about knowledge. Remember when they came in? They talked about the things they were going to do. They failed to deliver. They failed to deliver on short stay. They failed. We should have another major tertiary hospital in this state built now. They've been in 6 years. They failed. The reason we've had up to 6,000 hours of ambulance ramping is because we don't have enough beds. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough nurses. That sits at their feet.
Ash Young comments, the Cameron government's energy policy has resulted in WA importing coal from New South Wales, which we can't even use. How to fix our broken and unreliable energy system?
Yeah, look, there was a review, there's a government agency that looks into reliability. And in fact, there was a review published a little while ago, which said that there'd been 4 years of materially worsening reliability in our energy network. And that's all under the watch of Labor and Energy Minister Bill Johnson. And that's the reality. So it's less reliable. But look, I've said all along this, their announcement of shutting down the Collie coal-fired power stations early is going to put, I think, unbearable pressure on our electricity network. It's a crazy decision. They don't have to do it. They've done it to get a good headline and to sort of somehow tout their credentials. Now, once again, I'll say, I think that that energy transition can be done and it can make sense, but don't make precipitous decisions that put us under pressure. Those coal-fired power stations in Collie provide 30% of the energy in the network, and replacing that is a multi-billion dollar exercise. Look, at the moment we've got constrained supply chains all over the world, and of course everyone's trying to do the same thing in relation to renewables, so there's enormous competition in that space for actual physical equipment that you need. But the other thing is, you've got to do it in a way that doesn't burden households and industry with enormous costs. And I don't believe the Labor government's plan is achievable. I think they've made a precipitous decision for a good headline without looking at the reality of what has to be achieved. I would not do that. Look, ultimately, those Collie power stations, will ultimately close down, but don't do it precipitously. Let's have an ordered change process where genuinely you're not impacting it. Because what do we see with Federal Labor, and I might say with their unholy alliance with the Greens? The Greens are the good old men. My day when I was a boy, most of the Greens, as in the people who are formerly in the Green Party, are the good old-fashioned communists. And they don't care. They're extreme left. They do not care about how their philosophy impacts on the ordinary person. They talk about what they stand for, but in reality, they're ideologically driven. They don't care about the practical realities of what they want. And what are they doing? They're the ones driving the Federal Labor government now. They control Federal Labor because Federal Labor needs their support in the upper house to do what they want to do. So we're going to see. I think, to give State Labor some credit, I think they're trying to, hold back the bow wave a bit. But Federal Labor, I mean, they're just hostages to the Greens. And we're seeing increasingly appalling decisions coming out of Canberra. And as I say, the State Labor government's got caught up in this. I think they need to take a step back. Otherwise, we're going to see real problems with our power network over the next few years.
Okay. Ranky Files on TikTok says, what do you think about some in the WA police force saying that 750 police officers from the UK isn't enough?
Well, they know, and as I say, I just have enormous respect for our police force and what they have to do and what they have to put up with. Some of you may know if there are any police officers on, they'll know the day they face, but many police officers face circumstances that we can only imagine in terms of stress and hardship. It's probably the case, and there's a lot of issues. One of the issues is, where are these police going to live? Now, we heard any talk before about the terrible situation that she faces. But the truth is, this is an increasing reality. Rents are going through the roof. I was talking to a person in working with a company that built new apartments. They were saying a new set of apartments in Perth, it's just an ordinary set of apartments, but a two-bedroom, one-bathroom unit the rent for the cheapest was $600 a week, you know, and of course, any, you know, those of you that are trying to find apartments, you just can't get, or rental accommodation. It's not available. Houses are not available because of the crippling of our housing industry by Labor's decisions, but I can go into that at another time. It's where are those police going to even live? So I think there isn't, and is it going to be a huge demand? Let's see what comes of it. I mean, look, the minister's gone over there at least and tried to get some support. It's a huge cultural change for people coming to the country, even coming from the UK, and a cultural change coming into a police force that is different from the police force in the UK. So certainly welcome those officers here, but yeah, you're probably right. There's a large number of officers need to come in to replace the mass exodus from the police force.
Kate Atkin says, the government are making everything harder for older people. The Medicare going digital, and banks closing everywhere. It's very distressing.
Yeah, look, it really is. And there's an indifference, I think, to a lot of older people in government. Well, I'd say it's sort of a bit of a societal trend, and that is it's sort of old people should just go away to a nursing home and expire, and they're not important. And you see that in a whole range of government areas. Look, we're all gonna be older people, and I'm getting older, and you are all at the same rate. Can I say so? It's a real issue, and I agree. Look, there are lots and lots of areas, even in the area of now we're seeing reduction in mail deliveries, and I might say even I find this difficult, even though I mostly deal in the digital world, but that the loss of banks. There are a lot of areas where you need cash, and a lot of people, particularly a lot of older people, feel that's more secure dealing in cash. And I actually think they're quite right. Bit hard for someone to hack into your wallet. They can steal it, but, they can't do it from another country. So we need to make sure that services are accessible. Just because it's convenient doesn't mean it's a good reason for government to do it. And they shouldn't ignore the needs of older people who want to work. In an environment where they have ready access, I don't know how many of you have tried to telephone a government agency. I wanted to talk to the tax department about a matter. I think I was on the line for 2.5 hours. I mean, that's ridiculous. Interestingly enough, my local phone company, I got an answer in about 5 minutes, so they do it better. I think this is a concern. And these changes, they can't just be about some brutal drive to digital efficiency. You must ensure that you're dealing with the whole spectrum of the community, including those people who aren't, in that digital world.
Okay, we'll take one more question. Sorry to everyone, but we're already over time. But Nigel Morgan asks, David, how's the Nissan G60 coming along?
This is my Nissan. Look, I haven't been able to do anything since I got it working, but over this Easter holiday, I'm going to be doing more work. It's got no brakes at the moment, but can I tell you, I grew up as a kid on a farm, and driving vehicles without brakes was pretty well the norm. But I'm a bit apprehensive about my own kids because I think they may end up running into a tree. So the next thing I'm doing is getting the brakes going on it, and that'll then let it be drivable around the farm. And then I'm looking forward to making it really flash, and that is actually having a cover on the bare springs on the seats and those things. And then I might even get a windscreen that isn't completely shattered. But something to look forward to. But progress won't be super fast, but yep, brakes this Easter is my goal.
Okay, well, there are more questions, but we're over time, so that's the end of it.
Yep, well, thanks very much, everyone.